This is Richard Hatch, and these are scenes from the last episode of Geek Brunch Retrocast.
Nice.
Oh my god, what is that? Put it away! I don't want to see that!
What are you talking about?
That was from our last episode, don't you remember?
Put it away?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
I guess you must have blacked it out. It was too horrible. For
it was
you.
Too horrible. I shut it out. It was a long time ago, though, because isn't that the episode that I forgot to release?
Yeah, last time we talked, it was before Heroes.
Yeah, that would explain it. Short-term memory here.
Yeah, we have since touched each other since the last time we recorded. We've been in physical contact.
It was a good time at Heroes.
It was. And now we are back in our respective parts of the country, unfortunately.
Dum bum 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 ba ba da da ba 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 da da ba ba ba. So we decided to watch Battlestar Galactica. And I couldn't stop. I don't know how far you got.
I caught up with you. I watched the other two parts this morning.
Well, the things that caught my eye is the way they would end. Like, episode one ended with, to me, like a really stressful situation. And episode two ended with the shocking, like, oh my god! And you don't know what it is. You know, people screaming because they come out of the elevator.
Yeah, it kind of blends together to me. Well, I do remember the cliffhanger episode two.
Mm-hmm.
But kind of forget.
See, I remember watching the TV show, but I think I saw the movie first. I remember seeing it at the drive-in distinctively. So I don't know if they released it later or what, but... And the special effects were there. I mean, for the time period, 1978.
Yeah,
they had pretty good effects.
Yeah, didn't seem too bad.
They were definitely Buck Rogers standard. Yeah, I could hear you fine. Are you having trouble hearing me?
I can hear you. It's just kind of choppy, but I think it's on my end. As long as it sounds good on your end for the recording.
Well. You mean, am I, like, breaking up?
Just a little bit.
Let me.
Just kind of choppy.
Do you want me to reestablish?
What you're saying, but...
Do you want me to reestablish connection and see if it's any better?
Because
you're getting choppy now. I can't hear you. Oh, it's clear now.
Huh.
You were red before. Oh, the signal just went yellow, but that could be normal. Bill's always yellow.
I better look around my house for somebody using YouTube.
Yeah, somebody's playing with the internet. You're going to still go screaming around your house. Hey! Get off the internet!
Mabel, are you listening to YouTube? Are you watching YouTube? Look at me like, what? I ain't doing nothing.
What are you talking about? I don't know.
I'm being good.
What you talking about, Willis?
Why are you using that tone with me? Anywho.
Yeah. So let's get back to Battlestar Galactica. So we decided to watch 1978 Battlestar Galactica because it's something that I wanted to watch. And Chris was willing to watch because you've been into like a sci-fi kind of kick lately. I mean, watching a lot of retro Star Trek, and you saw Buck Rogers, and now you're watching Battlestar. Is this your first exposure to Battlestar Galactica?
Yep.
The old one?
Yeah, and I haven't watched... Well, I think I might have watched the... movie that introduced the more recent Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
I think I maybe saw a little bit of it, but I don't really I didn't really, if anything, I didn't watch much more than that, so it's pretty new to me as a franchise overall.
Yeah. So I enjoyed the new one. It just became too surreal. It became really bizarre. And that's what steered me a kind of I like the original 'cause it's pretty much straightforward sci-fi.
Yeah, and no, I mean, I enjoyed Buck Rogers when we did it, so.
Yeah, this one hooked me. Well, for one thing, I just love the theme. Like all this, like even the Buck Rogers theme. Da, 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 da. I like that theme too. But this one I really love. I love it a lot. And this opening, I don't remember. Like I love the plot of it because it's just like it's a peacekeeping mission, and the president is like, we need to make peace with the Cylons. And that turns into a they're deceiving them the whole time, and it's basically a plot to get rid of humanity because we do learn the origin of the Cylon, though. I don't know if you noticed that. I forgot about that. Because to me, they've always been robots, and you know, yeah, Baltar has always been associated with them, but I didn't realize like what they are. The concept is pretty badass because it's like, what if a civilization started to do stuff where robots started to take over, kind of like in Magnus Robot Fighter and stuff, and the robots took over and they won. That's the Cylon origin, essentially. And
Yeah, and there's an additional element too of almost not it's there's a subtlety there where in some ways they're still called the Cylons, so it's kind of like their society was replaced.
yeah.
You know, it's not even that necessarily there was a war between the original Cylons and the robots they created, but it's they kind of over time just gave over to the robots and transferred their likenesses into these Cylon robots, and there was almost you almost get the impression that there was just this preference in the society that they gave over to robotics instead of being organic. But
Right.
I kind of like that
Yeah, that
flavor to
was
it.
really cool. And the other thing that I forgot about is I like Rick Springfield. I think he's a cool singer. I like his music. He actually plays Zach, which is Apollo's brother.
Yeah, in
And
the first part.
yeah, Lauren Green Adama, he's got two sons and one daughter working on the ship. And Zach plays like this. He's Apollo. He wants to fly so bad. You know, he wants to get in the Viper, and he's been training like all his life for this, and he's looking forward to it. So he goes to Starbuck, and he's trying to convince Starbuck that he wants to go on this mission. And so Starbuck actually fakes sick. And it's really just to try to like go out there and check things out before the peacekeeping summit.
Yeah, it's supposed to just be a routine.
Yeah, it's just like a routine thing. There's not gonna run into anything. And they go out and they see this like these like refueling barges, and the fuel is like empty. And then they go back and Apollo goes back into the clouds, and he's like, "Holy crap! There's like a whole invasion force back there, of the Cylon. I forget what the Cylon ships are called. I have one. I have a Viper, and one of those Cylons.
Yeah, I
First
remember.
gener first generation toys, because the second generation, they thought it was too dangerous for kids." And they used to be able to open the wings or shoot these little plastic devices that were really tiny. One would shoot out of the nose of the Viper, and the other one, the Cylon ship, I can't remember what the name of it is. you'd be able to pull out the wings just a little bit, and it'd have two things that two little plastic like lasers that would shoot out. And I guess they deemed them too dangerous at the time, but they were really cool toys. And the Viper, I always thought of, had a very similar look to the X-Wing, without, without the X or the wings.
Yeah, I thought that too myself watching this. I thought they kind of reminded me of an X-Wing. I think the Cylon ships are called Raiders.
Okay, Cylon Raiders. What is the battle? Okay, there's the battle starship Galactica, which is that. But do you remember what the main base ships were called? Those were cool design. I like the design on those.
Actually, you almost said it. They're called base stars.
Oh, base stars. Yeah, those are cool ships.
Yeah, they kind of play into the plot, the base stars, and I thought it was cool. Well, I found it interesting because I had always heard that the 2004 series was a darker take on Battlestar Galactica,
Extremely
and
darker.
but in some ways, it made me think that the it gave me the implication that the original series
Oh, lighthearted.
was corny or was cheesier. And I mean, maybe later episodes are like that, but definitely this first story was still pretty dark. I mean, especially the first part of it where the colonies are all still annihilated, and because it's all a trick, and of the Cylons that they're going to negotiate for peace, but it was all a trick to get the colonies unprotected so they could attack the colonies. And I like how they staged that, how
Oh, the strategy was brilliant because they kind of like led the battle stars away from the planets,
right.
so they would be undefended, and then they went and attacked the planets while they were
Yeah.
keeping the battle stars engaged. So they had
Yeah.
fueled up so many Cylon ships with a Viper. What are they called again? Raiders.
Raiders.
Cylon Raiders ships. They had fueled up so many, some that were going towards the planet, and some, well, actually, they would put the battle stars near the planets. So think of those as like star destroyers. They're like huge ships where they could like launch all their raiders out of. So they park those near the planets so they could attack the planets, while just a whole colony of raiders just went and attacked the battle stars. And then
Right.
they did, like, Baltar really deceived the crap out of them, because the president was leading to be, this is going to be peace that they've been searching for this whole time. So Adama was like, well, at least let us go into like alert, and the president wouldn't let them go. He wouldn't let them send out additional Vipers, even though they knew something was going on.
Yeah, because he was afraid of the appearance that it would. They didn't want to. Because they've been at war for, it seems like, centuries. And so they're so excited about the idea of peace that they don't want to jeopardize that by protecting themselves how they should be and showing any kind of militarization. But I like how that they realize that something more is going on than just being attacked in space, because they realize that Cylon Raiders wouldn't be this far out into space normally without a base. But for some reason they stopped and fueled at this I don't know exactly what it was, but it seemed like just some kind of space junk or something, or some remnant of a ship that still had gas or something like
Yeah,
that on it.
there were fuel tankers is what they
Fuel
were.
tankers, yeah. And they're like, well, for some reason they fueled up again at that fuel tanker to make it the distance that they needed to. If they're really here for peace, there's no way that they would have done that. And that's when they realize, well, that must mean that the base stars are somewhere else deploying the ships. And that's how they kind of realize, oh shit, something else is going on here. And that's what first clues them into the fact that the colonies are going to be attacked. And
Also, Adama was pretty smart because he went against the president's rule, sort of. He says, "I'm going to do a training exercise." And he actually released Vipers out on what they believed was a training exercise, but he knew something was going on. So he sent out his Vipers where the other Battlestars, they didn't. So when the ships started to get attacked, Galactica was the only one in any sort of position to defend, you know?
Yeah, so all the other battle stars are destroyed. I like how they delivered that too when they're kind of on the basically the bridge of the battle star assessing damage, and you can tell that they expect that there at least would be some other battle stars that survived, and I thought it was well played and the emotion of realizing that they were the only battle star left.
Yeah. And wasn't her name Athena? Athena was the daughter. There was Apollo, Athena, and Zach. That Zach was a weird one because they're all kind of named after, Greek mythology, if you will.
Yeah, it's like which one of these guys is gonna die?
Yeah,
One that
yeah.
doesn't have a Greek god name,
And
isn't.
Zach was Rick Springfield. He was played by Athena at the time was dating Starbuck. So when she lost, the other thing that I liked is like Zach made a good sacrifice. Like Apollo and Zach were out on this thing, and then the Cylons started to go after him, and they actually disabled part of Zach's ship, so he couldn't go into that extra thrust that Apollo could. He couldn't hit that extra thrust on the stick shift and go faster. So he was like pedaling along with this whole raider invasion and right in back of him, and he was just trying to get to the battle stars in time. And he's like, "Apollo, you need to go on. You need to warn the battle stars." And Apollo didn't want to leave him, but he realized he had to, so he left him. And unfortunately, Zach didn't make it. Like he got close. He thought he was gonna make it, but as soon as he got like in sight of the battle stars, he was blown out of the sky, and that's when Athena, she flipped out. Like, and that actually led to her giving Starbuck later on a speech where she wanted to separate from him, sort of.
Yeah, and that was probably the first point at which I realized that she's sort of a pretty face in this.
Yeah.
Because I was not impressed. If there was a low point, she was one of the low points for me. I mean, she's very attractive, but not a very great actress in my
Well,
opinion.
she overacted. Like the crying scene was like not realistic.
Yeah, I didn't find her convincing at all throughout these, but that scene with Starbuck where he walks in on her changing
Yeah.
was not all that convincing. But it didn't ruin it for me or anything, but if I had to point out some negatives. But yeah, Starbuck was cool for me to see. I mean, there's a lot of famous people in this, and I of course know he was played by Dirk Benedict,
Yeah.
and I know him from A-Team
Yeah.
as
And
Face.
he's a very similar character. I mean, it's like is Dirk Benedict actually playing a character? Or is he really playing Dirk Benedict?
It's hard to say when he's a very attractive man, which is why he's cast as Face and why he's called Face in A-Team. But
And
yeah,
then
Star but he's a good actor for Starbuck too, because he's got that sort of cocky attitude.
right, he's one of the main pilots, and so is
He's
Boomer.
bit of a womanizer.
Yeah, he's a womanizer and a gambler. He's kind of like the Han Solo, if you will.
He's
Apollo's more of
a
the
funny
Luke Skywalker. And then Jolly or whatever his name is, he's kind of like Porkins.
guy. Yeah, they do have a Porkins, which is funny.
And he
And
survives.
you know who else is in this is and I didn't catch him. I don't know if you did, but Ed Begley Jr.
Yeah, I saw him in the credits.
As First Sergeant Greenbeam, but I didn't spot him.
I didn't either. That's what's weird.
I
He
think he
must
might
have
have been
not.
in the first episode because I was looking for him in the second and third, but I didn't spot him. But I wasn't looking. I didn't know he was in it when I
Well,
saw him.
that's how you could tell it was like released in meant to be released at once, like I think, because they like credited Rick Springfield and him throughout all three episodes, and they weren't even in it.
Yeah.
So,
But Jane Seymour.
yeah, Jane Seymour was a. I forgot she was in it. I really did.
She, you know, I growing up, I saw her here and there on TV, like as Dr. Quinn and
Yeah,
stuff like
Medicine
that.
Woman. Yep.
And I didn't really, you know, she was a little bit older at that point, especially in the eyes of a you know, a young boy or a teenage boy. But the first time I saw her in something where she was younger was the James Bond movie she was in, and I was like, holy shit, she was pretty when she was younger.
Yeah.
And then yeah, so and then this, she's younger. She's very good looking lady.
Very attractive woman.
She was not just when she was younger,
Yeah.
but yeah, that was cool to see her.
Humana,
Phenomena.
humana,
So yeah, she plays a reporter kind of. When you first see her, she's reporting on the supposed peace talks and from one of the colonies, and you sort of see from her perspective as all of a sudden the colonies start getting attacked. But she survives. So once Galactica survives the onslaught, they start sending. Well, a couple of them go down to one of the planets, to Caprica, and they start trying to bring. They basically load up any possible ship that they have in the colonies and get everybody on there, and basically form the fleet that's going to continue to search through space for Earth, the fabled colony. Because the background is that there's 12 colonies, and there's very much like a 12 tribes of Israel kind of thing going on here. But they, you know, it's Earth is just a rumor to them, but that's their what they decide to do is seek out. So with Galactica kind of as the lead, they form this group of ships carrying all these survivors, and so she survives, and
Along with her son.
along with her son Boxy, and they become characters throughout the three parts of this. She becomes
Right.
kind of a love interest of Apollo, because Apollo bonds with Boxy.
Yeah, he bonds with them, and he also creates him a Daggett, because he was real fond of his dog, like he on the planet, and he lost his dog. So he
Yeah.
got a robotic dog called Moffat, and he's meant to emulate a Daggett, which is like a
Yeah.
dog, another term for a dog. But the thing I really like is they after they were devastated and they're trying to regroup, there to me there was like a real tense and stressful situation where they actually sent like Boomer, Apollo, and Starbuck to the other ships to assess the other ships.
Yeah.
And they realized they had no water, they had no food, there were people like sick. And every time they like radio back to the command ship, they wouldn't get a straight answer. They were just like, okay, we're working on it. You know,
Yeah.
but the reason they couldn't give them an answer as leadership is they didn't have the food to give, which was really stressful. And on one of the ships, there's even like tension between the cultures because there's all kinds of people on these ships.
Yeah.
But there is a prostitute. I forget what they call her in the like what a prostitute's called.
Right.
But she's on the ship and she has a hurt leg and she's like, "Well, tend to the other people." And then there's some woman that just starts screaming at the top of her lungs like, "Get her out of here. She's a slut," you know. And they actually take her out of that area, which and get her treatment, which is pretty quick and fast. And she actually becomes like another interest for like Starbuck, which I after she broke Athena broke up with him, he's like, "Well, I might die on this next mission. I'm gonna go have some sex." But Athena still has feelings for Starbuck, obviously, because she goes looking for him quite a bit. So
Yeah,
there's that.
Cassiopeia, I think is how
Yeah,
you say it.
yeah.
That's also like taken from mythology and stuff, her name.
Or star
Is the
systems, yeah.
yeah, the name of the well, yeah, the star system takes a lot of star systems are all taken from Greek gods and things,
Yeah.
Jupiter, but so well, it was interesting because there's no analog of her, but her appearance. Especially when she first appears with the blonde hair and the red dress they adapted for Tricia Helfer in the new series. They sort of took her appearance but moved it to a different character, took her
Oh
look.
yeah, the Cylon. Yeah.
Number six or whatever I think she's called.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think also Starbuck's interaction with her helps to establish some aspects of his character too. And gets him in some trouble later on. But
Yeah,
yeah,
he
that's their real first problem once they've escaped the Cylons is how are we going to survive with the materials that we need? And like you said, there's a real cross culture of people that are normally used to having separation from each other, including the rich and the poor, and that's how we get introduced to a lot of the. There's a Council of 12 that rule, a representative of each of the tribes. Again, it's very Israel, and a number of those are killed, so they have a new Council of 12. And one of those is Sire Yuri, who becomes a real problem. Apollo and Boomer have to force their way in by gunpoint to where he's hanging out because he's hoarding all kinds of food and water
and
and for
women, it
himself
seems
and
like.
women, and he's partying, and his wife, Apollo calls him out because his wife, who apparently was much more,
Seemed like a humanitarian of some sort.
yeah, much more admirable person, was just killed, and here he is partying with all these women, and so they have a confrontation with him, and it's the first of many instances where Apollo butts heads with Sire Yuri, and
And he's
his.
a major player too, because he kind of leads them into the next episode.
Yeah, I mean because of this whole instance, they do come across the or this whole need for supplies, they do come across this planet that has an outpost that they're not aware of. And at first it seems really promising 'cause they go down to the surface. It's like supposed to be a mining community, but what they find there is just this establishment that's full of gambling, or everyone always seems to win, and just lots of materials, and they seem to just be completely ignorant of what has happened, and it seems
They
some
like
people are really
leave
excited by it.
humans there because they make it like a perfect entertainment, and like you said, everybody wins. And it's like you're in Vegas, except you never lose.
And some people are really cautious, a few people, Apollo, but some people are really excited about it. Like Starbuck's kind of in the middle. He wants to follow orders on the one hand, but on the other hand, he goes down with Boomer and he's like, "Well, let's not report about this right away. I want to, play a few games and try to figure out what's really going on." And he's here on the side, he's like more focused on trying to sign these female singers that have really weird faces. They have like double mouths,
It's
and
like a triple face or
they have like
something.
a yeah really
One
strange
on the left,
faces.
one in the middle, and one on the right.
Yeah,
And they're
but he's like
offset.
he's trying to sign them to a contract to like take their show on the road and like make tons of money off of it and get out of the army.
Yeah.
But Adama as cautious about the whole situation. It's like, well, this is too good to be true, so it's probably not. So let's take our time. But meanwhile, Count.
I love the way he plays it though, because it is really like kind of like the ultimate strategist, because he doesn't even tell his son. He doesn't tell
Oh,
Apollo
you mean
like
when
his
as eventual
plan.
plan? Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. But before we get there, Sire Yuri, he sends basically half of the population of their entourage down to the planet, and Adama wanted to be much more cautious than that, so it puts them in a position. And going further than that, Sire Yuri's whole plan is, if we just destroy all our weapons and ships, we'll show that we're defenseless, and the Cylons will leave us alone, which is pretty stupid. But his logic is, look, the only reason, the Cylons came after us is because we defended these other populations from them. We came to the rescue of these other planets. If we hadn't done that, they would have never bothered us, which is pretty stupid logic, because the Cylons would have just gotten to them eventually anyways. But he thinks, let's just destroy all our weaponry, and
And send
we'll
all of our colonial soldiers down. And
right.
that's when Adama gets pretty smart. Lauren Green says, I ain't gonna have this. So he like has all his pilots, the majority of them, go down, but keeps his like A-list pilots on in that scene and doesn't tell him what his plan is, because he doesn't want Yuri or anybody else to know, because he's doing this as a I really screwed up. He feels a lot of guilt because he could have taken action. He suspected things, and he did the best he could under like presidential orders to not violate the president. But he feels guilt, like it's my fault that my wife is dead. It's my fault that I lost my son. It's my fault that all these battle stars are gone, because I should have known better.
Yeah, he
So
feels
this.
like he should have gone even a step further and just disobeyed the president. And
Yeah.
because in hindsight's 2020, but really, he, like you said, he did the best he could, and he isn't the type to disobey the president,
Right. And he really made everybody think that they were going along with Yuri's plan, when in fact he was hiding some of his soldiers on the planet, on standby, and while Apollo and them. He wasn't 100% sure this was like a ruse. He was gambling, essentially. He says, I'm pretty confident something's wrong. I want to be prepared for it this time. Last time I wasn't. This time I'll be prepared. And if something happens, then I'm prepared. If something doesn't happen, then we're okay. And the way that when we find out at the end of episode two, because they go down on these little rovers, very much like the Buck Rogers rovers, and I guess Buck Rogers came after this. I can't remember. I think so. But they had those like they're like little tanks that transport, and they have like a gun turret on the top. And Boxy and Apollo are on one, and they divided their Boxy actually got captured by these weird little insectoids, or I don't know what they're like, insect aliens. That are like mining the planet. And at the time we don't know what's going on, so all they're worried about is like, we gotta find Boxy, you gotta find Boxy. And they find Boxy safe in that casino area, and that's where they kind of meet back up with Boomer and Starbuck. And they think it's safe at first, but these weird insectoid aliens play like a major part, because the humans are like a food source for them, and they don't find out until like a cliffhanger on the end of episode two, where they actually go. There's like these floors. It's like all the floors are below ground, and you go like level one, level two, level three, and they're okay. That's where you go to your rooms. And if you go beyond that, you don't know what's beyond that. Like the people are hitting the elevator buttons and they don't know what's going on, but they're getting driven. And it ends with like a woman going down. Like she says, "Oh, I'm so full. I thought that was so funny. I ate so much." But
Yeah.
she's not fat or anything. She just ate a lot. And they're like, I think what the point they were trying to make is they're feeding them, they're filling them up with food and stuff so they can eat them.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, they fatten them up, and it's like everyone's, it's like you're staying at a hotel, and then every once in a while they queue an elevator to go down below the floors that you're not supposed to go to, and you can't control the elevator anymore, and you're like, "Where's Bill Bulmer? Where's Bill Bulmer? I need help."
That's what I was thinking of when I watched that. It's like,
Yeah.
where's Bill?
And there's no
God
Bill
dang.
to save them. And so they end up on the bottom floor, and that's how they pull their victims in. And
And at the end of episode two, they do a really good job because all you hear is the woman screaming and the guy in shock, like, ah!
yeah, when the
And you're
elevator
like, well, what's
spills,
down
hopefully
there? What's
they
down
see
there?
what's down there. Yeah, and so that Cassiopeia, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but she's one of the ones that
Cassiopeia.
gets Cassiopeia. She gets captured by them. But yeah,
She gets
Apollo and
captured after Starbuck and Athena run into Cassiopeia all at the same time. And Starbuck's
yeah.
trying to keep both women at the same time. So that kind of shows you what he's like. He's not being honest, like, okay, I'm with
Right.
this other woman now. He doesn't tell Athena that. He just lets the
Yeah.
situation run its course.
Yeah, it's that classic situation. He gets caught with both of them at the same time. Or Cassiopeia goes to get a drink, and Athena shows up, and Cassiopeia comes back and's like, "I think you're in my seat." But then they both end up pissed at him.
Well, that's
And
because he doesn't want to go with either one of them. He's so interested in signing the singers, like you were talking about earlier.
yeah, and
He's like
also he's
switched
even more
modes.
interested in being a pilot and stuff like that too.
Yeah.
But yeah, once they put the situation where, Apollo and Starbuck, they're supposed to just be a part of the ceremony and receive commendations and stuff, but they do catch on to something going on because I think it's Starbuck that notices guys not only dressed as soldiers, but they have the insignia that they're supposed to be a part of his squadron. He says, "I don't know those guys." And he tries following after him, but he doesn't catch up. And that's when he stops Apollo and says, "There's guys wearing our uniform, and I don't know who they are. There's something going on here." And they realize they're like the only legitimate soldiers there because of Adama's plan.
And they almost like blow up the plan because I don't remember if you remember that scene where Colonel Ty is down there and he's like taking uniforms. Like, and he calls it like a random inspection, and he starts chewing him out and says, "You're not ready for this. You're not prepared. You guys don't have everything in order." And he takes the uniforms with him is what he's doing is he's grabbing a bunch of uniforms to give to other people that are aboard the ships so they could pretend they are colonial fighters.
Right. Yeah, we haven't mentioned Colonel Ty, but he's pretty much the one that works with Adama the most. He's the one that Adama
He's
runs the plan by.
no, number one.
Yeah, he's number one. Yeah, because Adama realizes that Yuri and everyone else, they have his quarters bugged, and he's got no way really, but he needs someone to work with him on this plan. And so he actually calls Ty down to one of the hangars basically, and tells them to get in the ship next to him so they can talk over the comm in the ships. So it's a place that's private. So that's how he gets Ty's cooperation and helps him out with this plan. Because they realize, he says to Ty, "If you were the Cylons and you wanted to take out all of our army, when would you do it?" And Ty realizes, oh, if you knew that they were going to all be down on the surface as part of the ceremony, you'd attack the ceremony. Is exactly,
Yeah.
and that's how he sets up this why he sets up this plan, because he doesn't want to repeat. And the Cylons are looking to repeat and take out.
They were actually doing a lot of strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And Adama caught on to it this time. Like, he was burn me once, you're not going to do it again. You know.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that made it pretty engaging as a story. Yeah. You know, because you got the strategies of the Cylons, and then Adama's coming back with a counter strategy to avoid being taken out twice. You know, and how are they going to survive? And this whole time we have also the traitor,
Baltar,
Count Baltar, is the traitor. He was a part of the council, and he's the one that really is kind of the reason that the Cylons are able to have pulled this off. And throughout, you kind of see his realization after the initial attack happens that the Cylons, he becomes kind of desperate throughout the middle section of the story, because he realizes the Cylons really don't give a shit about him either, and they're just kind of using him.
And his goal was he was going to take out certain planets, and then he'd rule one. So he mm-hmm. just wanted to become a ruler, and it backfired entirely because that one Cylon used him.
Yeah.
And he was like, why would I ever trust a human? You know, I want to eradicate you.
Right.
Every single human left. And then mm-hmm. Baltar's like, oh, crap. And the interesting thing about this is once they realize that there's fighter pilots that are wearing their uniforms and they don't recognize them, they know all their fighter pilots. They go chasing them down to the bottom of the elevator. They go down in the elevator, and Apollo knows how to rewire an elevator by just blasting it and then rewiring it. So they're able to get down to the bottom and see what's going on. And Boxy's chasing his Daggett down there, Moffat, and they all run in, and they actually run into Cylons down there. And that's when they realize, hey, this isn't what's really going on. And they actually see Cassiopeia and a bunch of other people. Like, there's a scene there where they have a bunch of humans inside of like these honeycombs, and there's like this little like baby rodent feeding off of one of the humans in one of the catacombs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really crazy.
It kind of reminded me, they have these things in Japan I haven't seen firsthand, but I've seen them on TV and stuff, called capsule hotels.
Oh, where they actually sleep in those tubes? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and they kind of reminded me of a capsule hotel, but instead they're corpses in there.
Yeah.
Being fed on, but they kind of look like Japanese capsule hotels. But, yeah, so they do actually manage to rescue Cassiopeia.
Yeah.
I didn't really, like, I feel like Boxy and the dog, they were just kind of in it to have a dog and a boy in it or something. Like, they don't...
Well, I think it's like the Strain or any type of one of those situations like Walking Dead, or where they put in some situation where they have to defend somebody while they're fighting.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The vulnerable
characters. Yeah, the vulnerable characters.
Yeah.
And I think it's to make for a more stressful situation. But having said that, Boxy might have caused a lot of trouble, but Moffat, he sure took a piece of the Cylon's legs out and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's one of the first ones to go into battle, which is cool.
He bites the legs. He does a lot of good stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He attacks like a dog would, like if a faithful dog, to protect their owners, you know.
Yeah, and I do like how Boxy being in it does. I like the characterization it gives to Apollo. I think it helped define. The other thing besides the strategy and enjoying that, it has some good characters, and I think Starbuck and Apollo are pretty well defined as characters in these three episodes, and I like how they are both heroes in their own way. And like you could compare him as you did to Luke and Han in some ways, but they definitely are distinct from each other. You definitely don't get the two of them confused. And I think we talked about how they sort of define that with Starbuck, but I think with Apollo, one of the ways is through his relationship with Jane Seymour and Boxy. And Boxy in particular, because the reason that Jane Seymour's character comes to get to know Apollo is that she sees he's good with kids, and so she asks him to talk to Boxy because Boxy's not doing well. And I thought it was a good scene. I thought that it followed up on that you could actually Richard Hatch played it well. He actually seemed like he was good with kids. And so you see that side of his personality. He's more kind of the more reliable of compared to Starbuck in terms of interpersonal relationships.
Right. Yeah, they establish those characters, Adama, a little bit of Colonel Ty, and Athena and Cassiopeia probably the most, and Boxy a little bit.
Yeah, and Boomer a little bit. You don't
Yeah,
see Boomer doesn't do a lot, but I did like him.
Boomer's kind of like who's the fighter pilot in Star Wars that's just a badass dude? Wedge. Is it Wedge? He survives all of the X-wing battles. I get
Yeah,
them confused.
I do too. I get the besides Porkins, I get the different
But
X-wing
he's actually in
fighters.
all three movies, and I can't think of his name, but he's kind of like that. He seems to like be like a really good friend of Starbucks, but also a really good friend of Apollo's, and he seems really dedicated as far as like he'll do his job, you know? He's gonna do his job.
Yeah, he's kind of between the two.
Yeah.
You know, he's not as like Apollo's kind of give it. I mean, Apollo is the sun. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
Sun, in addition to being the Son of Adama. You know, so he's like the bright light. You know, like I'm gonna just be the super heroic one. But and Starbuck's more of like the down and dirty fighter kind of guy, and Boomer's in the middle. You know, like he's not as crazy as Starbuck, but he's just more like I'm gonna get the job done than Apollo is.
Right. And so once they realize that there's Cylons down there, they kind of blast their way back up to the surface, and Yuri's doing his little speech. And they say, "We got to get out of here. You know, there's Cylons down there," and Yuri doesn't listen to him. And as
Yeah.
soon as the Cylons come out blasting, it's like, "Listen to them. Get out of here."
Yeah, I like that. He's like, I'm the leader, I'm in charge here, and then the Cylons actually follow after them and into the room. He's like, he's the leader, listen
Yeah,
to
listen to him. And
him. As
that's
he
when they all
shifts hands.
abandon and go back to the Vipers that are all laying there on the land, and they're kind of like getting ready to blast off as they go on. It's kind of like they're escaping Hoth, if you will. But they actually go shoot up into this. They have like a countdown. Like the Cylon ships. They're coming after the Battlestar, and they're closing in and closing in and closing in, and they're like they're talking in terms of, I don't know what parsecs, I don't remember the term they use, but they're like getting closer and closer and closer, and Adama's waiting for, like, we're gonna surprise the hell out of him. He waits kind of like till last minute before the Vipers launch and it actually defend the Battlestar and attack the Cylon ships that are there. So
Yeah,
yeah,
his plan really works out.
works out really well. And then I really loved what Apollo and Starbuck did
Yeah, they go one
is
better.
they go one better, because it's just those two guys, and they said, let's follow these God, I can't even think of those ships you told me, and I can't remember the ships' names.
Raiders.
Raiders, thank you. They follow the Cylon Raiders back, and they actually find the base star. And once they find the base star, they start communicating over the line saying, "Blue Squadron, Red Squadron, Orange Squadron, Purple Squadron." Like they're like the tons of ship chasing them down.
Yeah,
And
they pretend, yeah.
the base star freaks out. They're like, "Holy crap, we got a whole colony of a squadron of fighter planes coming after us, and it's just Apollo and Starbuck." So they lead the ship down to the Earth, where they planted like the trihelium or whatever that mineral is to blow up.
Right.
And they blow up the base star because they escape.
Yeah, because the base star, because it thinks it's being pursued by a whole bunch of vipers, it tries to hide, and it gets much closer to the surface of the planet than it would if it knew that it was only two vipers. It would just have been on the offensive, and that is what allows Starbuck and Apollo to get so close that they can ignite the chemical or whatever it is, and explode the base star. Yeah, it was a really cool plan. It was definitely it was fun to watch.
And Athena is like Uhura. She's like the communication. So she's like telling Adama and Colonel Ty, "Orange Squadron, Purple Squadron." What
It's like we don't
are
have an orange squadron or a purple
they?
squadron. What the hell are they doing? What are they
But
talking about? Yeah,
that was a brave thing to do, though, because if they pulled it a little closer, they could have got killed. Like they really put their lives in danger for the betterment of the to even find the base star, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it helps with Starbuck. They do a good job of keeping him from being so much of a rogue that he doesn't seem heroic, you know. They do
Yeah.
a good job of still making him seem heroic, which I thought was good. But yeah, we have had like a little bit of an epilogue where we see that Count, I keep wanting to say Count Dooku. You can't remember Raiders, and I can't remember this guy's name.
Baltar.
Baltar. We see that Baltar is brought before, which turns out to actually be a new leader of the Cylons. And he, instead of wanting to exterminate Baltar, he wants to make use of Baltar because of everything that's happened. Realizes, okay, maybe we need to keep this human around so we can pick his brain as to what the humans are planning because they outsmarted us again.
But he also wants to say he wants to establish peace because he's a different type of leader than his predecessor.
Yeah, he
That's
says
what's
that.
weird.
I didn't believe him.
But yeah, I thought he was pulling one over, but he says, "I'm different. I have, my predecessor was kind of like old school,
Yeah.
eradicate the humans. I have a different philosophy than
Yeah.
he does." So
Yeah,
yeah,
so it's interesting.
that was pretty good. I really enjoyed it. And I don't usually sit down and watch like 3 hours or, well, it was probably like 2 hours of TV, and I did.
Yes, well, probably two and a half almost. You
Yeah.
know what I thought that was kind of funny was there besides Athena, there's a woman who is often shown as communications on the bridge of the Galactica. They keep showing the same woman. And I just thought it was funny because it's an actress named Sarah Rush. Apparently that I looked when I looked it up, but I thought she looked a lot like Jennifer Lawrence. I just thought it was kind of amusing because Jennifer Lawrence wasn't even alive.
Yeah.
But
But you were curious because they kept showing her.
yeah, and I thought, well, I know it's not Jennifer Lawrence, obviously, but I wonder who that is because she kind of looks like her.
I think the Ed Begley Jr. guy was one of the guys that was at one of the comms on the command ship on Galactica
Maybe.
with the little headset on. They kept showing him on episode one, but he didn't really say much or do much, you know?
Yeah, he's in the next couple episodes, so I have to look out for him.
Yeah.
Because it says he was in this three-part story, and then he's in the next, which is a two-part story.
But
and a
the
couple other
interesting thing
episodes.
that we didn't address, and I still don't know the answer to, is did they get any supplies off that planet? Because the trillium was the mineral that they blew up. I mean, I wonder if they were able to take some of it and take some of the supplies that were at the casino and stuff back to the ships. Because that was the whole purpose. If they didn't get any of that, then you still have like tons of ships with a bunch of starving people, no fuel, you know what I mean? And they're just gonna have to leave.
We shall find out. Hey, this is an interesting trivia item, though, because you were saying certain things looked kind of like Buck Rogers, and that was produced by the same person, Glenn Larson, and so props from Battlestar Galactica were recycled for Buck Rogers.
There you
So it actually was the same stuff. They just reused it because.
Well, definitely the, you know, when they shoot out of the ships, it had the same kind of launch mechanism, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I guess since they're both short-lived series, they went ahead and reused some stuff.
Yeah.
So.
So that was a lot of fun. I forgot. I remembered a lot of the first episode. Like I knew all that part. I forgot about those little insectoid things eating the humans. I forgot about that in the casino. And I remember the Baltar scenes, but man, I didn't remember that whole casino thing. So that was like watching it again for the first time.
Nice.
1978 was a long time ago.
It was. It
I didn't
was.
watch it in syndication. I kind of watched it as it was playing. And there might be some like Buck Rogers. Oh, we forgot to mention that another link to Buck Rogers is that one guy that was part of the console, right? He was Dr. I can't remember his name.
Dr. Goodfellow. I
Dr. Goodfellow in the
posted about
second
it on
season,
Facebook
right?
this morning, so
Yeah.
what I say? Yeah, I said Dr. Goodfellow was on the Council of 12. So yeah, that was funny. What's his name?
Kind
Hyde,
of
what?
drove us crazy in Buck Rogers. He places himself in danger every time. Because he's like an 80-year-old man that wants to go down on the planet every time.
Wilfred Hyde White was his name.
Yeah.
That's the guy's name. He lived till 1991. He was 87 when he died.
He looked pretty old.
That's why I was,
Series, you know.
why I was remarking on
He
that, because
must
he
have been
already
in his
looked really old.
70s. Yeah. Well, 1991, this was 78. Yeah, he's pretty old.
Yeah, I think you're right. 70s sounds about right.
So,
So,
do you want to cover a comic book?
some comic books,
Comic books?
some funny pages.
Yeah.
Sure, I got some comic books to talk about. Some retro, some oldie comic books. You wanted me to start off then, or?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, he was a hero to some, a villain to others, and wherever he rode, people spoke his name in whispers. He had no friends, this Jonah Hex, but he did have two companions. One was death itself, the other, the acrid smell of gun smoke. I read Weird Western Tales, number 27. So I just happened to get. And it's a story called The Meadow Springs Crusade. It was written by Michael Fleischer with art by someone named Nolly Penaligon, and it was edited by Joe Orlando. Yeah, this is a pretty cool story where it deals with women's suffrages. And so there's a woman That's kind of the leader of their group. I think it's in Nebraska where they're located, that she's they're trying to get the vote for women, and they are being harassed by men who are hooding them, hiding themselves behind hoods, like the Ku Klux Klan. And they interrupt a rally, and they tie up some of the women and take them out of town just to harass them. And they let them go, but it's just to kind of give them a warning and stuff. And Jonah Hex happens to come to town, and when he stops in at the sheriff's office, this woman, I'll catch her name here in a second, but he comes across this woman. She's come back to town, and she's complaining to the sheriff about their harassment. He's like, "Well, the sheriff's pretty useless. He's not willing to do anything and help out at all." But he said, "Well, there's Jonah Hex. He'll work for anybody as long as you got the money." And but it's kind of funny, Jonah Hex being Jonah Hex. He says, she asks him if he's a supporter of women's suffrage. She says, "Probably not. What in blazes is it?" So she tells him it's the right of a woman to vote, and he says, "Sheriff, I think this here female is trying to have some fun at my expense." Like, "Ma'am, do you know what would happen if this country, if and women started voting? First thing they'd do, ma'am, is pass a constitutional amendment to outlaw drinking. Then they'd..." So he's not in favor of the whole idea. But just like the sheriff said, if she'll pay him, he'll protect her. And so he tells her, "Well, take me out for a steak dinner and tell me all about it." So she explains what's going on, and he's like, "Well," he's like, "I'll take it easy on you." He's like, "If you just pay me $500 a week, I'll protect you." So she's like, "Oh, take it easy, $500." But he does end up protecting her, and there's a guy named Thraxton who is like a local political leader and stuff, and he knows that if women get the right to vote, that they're gonna vote for his opponent. So he sends some of his men, and they come in, with the cloaks over their heads, to try to attack this leader of the suffragist group. And it's Jonah Hex. If they climb in this window and they see this woman in a chair reading, with a bonnet over her head and stuff, and they go to attack her, and it's Jonah Hex. And he's dressed up like a woman. But he's got his two pistols in his hand. So he makes the guys take off their hoods and reveal who they are and stuff, and then they dress the two guys up as women and march them out of the saloon where they're staying. One of the guys gets his ass slapped on the way out, and he turns around and he's like, "Whoa," because the guy's got like a beard and stuff. And Jonah's like, "They're just a couple of farm gals at heart, and well, they're still sort of shy around strangers." And the guys that slapped their ass was like, "Ooh, with sisters like that, mister, they can be as shy as they want." But he sends the two guys dressed up. He like puts them on horses, but ties their hands, and he sends them back to the Thraxton's camp with signs over their necks that say, "We support women's suffrage." So all the other men working for Thraxton start laughing at him and stuff. But so now they realize, all right, well, we have to deal with Jonah Hex if we're going to get to this woman. But so they try to set up, they pay a little kid to call Jonah Hex over. It's like a fake out. They set a trap for him. And so he has to fight his way out of this trap. They're on like a cliffside, and Jonah almost goes off the side of the cliff, but he has to catch on to some plants, and anyway, gets back, but he gets yelled at by the leader of the suffrage group for because she thinks he's just been lax in his duties. But so he follows her around as they're, she's continuing her campaign. But unfortunately, even though she's all the work she's put in, the legislator votes down the amendment for women to vote in this case. So she's upset, but she starts crying, and she gives Jonah his money, and he's about to leave town, but Thraxton and his boys show up. They say, "You don't want to throw down on me, Thraxton. Neither do your boys." And they're like, "Oh yeah, suppose you tell us why not." Bram, 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 bram. Without even saying anything further, he shoots them all dead. And as he's going to get on his horse, Thraxton is still not dead yet, and he lifts up his gun to shoot Jonah in the back, and then blam, he gets shot, and it's the woman who was leader of the suffrage group. She saves Jonah's life. She's got a rifle, and she's, "Well, I'll bet you're expecting me to thank you, ain't you?" "Well, I'll," she said, "I don't expect anything from a conceited, pig-headed man like you. But the way I figured, I just saved your life, and you owe me a favor. Stick out your arm. Stick out my what fur?" And so she pins a support women's suffrage banner on Jonah Hex's arm. He rides out of town. He's like, "It's humiliating. That's what this is. Downright humiliating."
What a revolting development.
Yes. But yeah, it was a very entertaining issue. There's a letter in the back that talks about how Tony Dzinga had recently left the book, and this Noli Panic Panaligan is a recent replacement. And I looked up Noli Panaligan, I can't, or whatever you want to say it. Didn't really do a lot of work, but it is definitely a suitable replacement. He's got a very realistic style. And it's real suitable. It's really good in getting the sort of the period, the Western period, down. Everything looks real authentic and stuff. And a lot of times, he draws Jonah using his shadow to kind of, or using his hat to kind of shadow his face, his disfigured face. But then, he'll come out of the shadow, and you see the disfigurement around his mouth and stuff. And yeah, I thought it was,
Kind of Clint Eastwood like on some
yeah.
film, you know. You'll see a cigarette in the shadow of his face because the sun is like, oh, his cowboy hat is, giving it shade, so you can't really see the details of his face, and then he walks out and you
Yeah.
can see it.
But yeah, I really liked I enjoyed reading it. It was fun to read because because of all of the phonetic that Fleischer does for Jonah Hex and some of the other just like dudes about town, with the accent that they talk with, how he writes that out gives a lot of flavor to it. And I liked how this is kind of true of any Jonah Hex. His character is just interesting because he's kind of that reluctant hero. I thought it was true to his character that he really didn't, take after the idea of women voting, but he was willing to help out anyway as long as they paid him. So, yeah, it was entertaining for sure.
Yeah, I gotta finish that run at some point. I'm so close.
Of your Western Tales or of his
Yeah, I need
book?
12 through 17 and like 19 and 20 and then
Gotcha.
29 through 31 and then I'm done. And that series ran one, through 71, so but All Star Western was 1 through 11, and that's when you get into the first appearance of Jonah Hex, and it gets expensive.
Yeah.
But if I run into it, I will buy it. I do have the full run of Jonah Hex, both volumes after this, but I'd sure like to finish this run. The
Well, I
ones
only
that I'm
have issue
missing are quite
27.
expensive.
Yeah.
Those early ones, anyway.
Right. Yeah. That's usually the ones that you're missing
Yeah.
at this point from a run.
And it must have been like when I did place an order, like with my comic shop, that they were missing these issues too. Because chances are I would have swooped them out. But I bought most of my Weird Westerns and Jonah Hex from the comic shop. Because some guy came and sold a huge collection, and I was like,
Okay.
oh, I'm just going to buy them all. And that's when I went to mycomicshop.com and got the sci-fi one too, which was just titled Hex, which took
Oh,
place in
right.
the future.
Yeah.
That's cool. So my choice is a book that I was searching for at the con but didn't get. I bought Ghost Rider number one. This is not his first appearance because he first appeared in Marvel Spotlight, and I own most of the Marvel Spotlights except for his first appearance and his last appearance in Marvel Spotlight, but I have all the others. But I think that's something that I want to target at some point. This is Ghost Rider, written by Gary Friedrich. He's, the creator, and Tom Sutton is the artist. And just like I covered Iron Man number one, I think on this podcast, I covered it somewhere. It was kind of jarring because it's continued right out of Marvel Spotlight, just like Iron Man number one was continued right out of Marvel Suspense. So,
Tales of Suspense.
Tales of Suspense, thank you. And this one had a story arc where he was trying to rescue this girl, Roxanne. San, you
Roxanne.
don't have to put on the red
You don't have to put on
light.
the Sorry, Mabel. It's like, what the hell are you
You
doing?
hit a note that scared her.
Yeah.
I was hitting a note with I was singing a Battlestar Galactica theme to Harley, and she was barking. She was a woo.
Like, please stop.
Yeah, especially when I hit the middle part where I go doo 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 doo. She would go nuts.
She wants to sing with you.
Yeah. So he at this point, I think Ghost Rider can only change to Ghost Rider when the sun goes down. So there's like a police barrier, and he has to break through the police barrier, and as Johnny Blaze, he decides to ram his motorcycle through, and the cops shoot him in the back as he rams itself through, and he flips the motorcycle and passes out. And they're like, we gotta rush him to the hospital, take him to the hospital. Meanwhile, this is the first appearance of Damien Hellstrom, which is a demonologist, which is the son of Satan. And I do own all of the son of Satan's appearances in Marvel Spotlight. He was a character in college where I wanted to collect all of his series, and I think I have everything. And this was his first appearance where he wasn't like the self in his own title or headlining the book. And this is another story that's going on here that they're setting up where there's this Native American reservation where this daughter is possessed by some kind of demon, and he's actually trying to call Hellstrom to come help with the situation, and he does get contact him. So even though it's his first appearance, you kind of only see him in shadow, like just like his face, a silhouette of his face. You don't ever get to see him personally. You hear him talk and stuff on the phone, but you don't actually get to see him full figure. He's always in the shadows. And there's this guy that also rides, Johnny Blaze is a stuntman, and his name is Bart. And he's also works at the scene where they do like motorcycle stunts, etc. And he comes and brings flowers to Roxanne. She's in the hospital. And she doesn't remember a lot, but she remembers Bart and everything that was going on. And Bart tells her that if Johnny doesn't make the show, they could, the cycle show, it could go under and everybody could go broke. So he's gonna do the jump. And this was like a crazy Evel Knievels type stunt. Like he's it could he could die during it. So he's gonna do the stunt in Johnny Blaze's absence. And Hellstrom does in this episode, in this issue, open up his shirt though, and it has the pentagram on his chest. So you do get to see that. And what the person they come to talk to Roxanne Simpson, the police, and they said that Johnny's been in the hospital. He was in an accident, he was shot. And that's when Bart says, "I gotta go handle the motorcycle gig for sure." And as he's in the hospital, he looks out the window and it's turning dark, and he knows he's gonna turn to Ghost Rider. So at one point, the Hulk had that too. Like he would only transform at night. I guess the Ghost Rider did too. That
Yeah,
later changes, because my
early
first
on.
exposure to Ghost Rider was the Champions, which was a team of Hercules, Black Widow, Iceman, and Angel, and Ghost Rider. It was an oddball group to put together, but it was a lot of fun. And Ghost Rider actually rides a taxi in this one, which is very interesting because he doesn't have his bike. He flames up and then he flags down a taxi. And he tells him where to take him because he knows to go stop Bart from making the jump. Well, Bart goes to the cycle show and he's gonna make the jump over the canyon, and it gets really suspenseful. He makes the jump. It looks like he's gonna make it, and he doesn't make it. There's a wind gust and he hits the side of the mountain and dies. And Roxanne goes nuts because she's there in her wheelchair watching. And Johnny shows up as Ghost Rider, and she, even though she sees him as Ghost Rider, she knows it's Johnny, and then she passes out. And that's kind of how it ends. And then it ends on a cliffhanger with that, with Hellstrom coming to what do they call it? Exorcise the demon from that female. And it says continued in Marvel Spotlight number 12. And it looks like Ghost Rider is going to fight something with Satan too, but it says if you want to, continue this story, you go to Marvel Spotlight number 12. So yeah, I did a really good job, and I got the gist of most of it, more so than Iron Man number one. Like it wasn't jarring. I was able to follow the stories because there was several panels that told me what happened and what issues I had to go to if I wanted to read it. So you get the gist of what the story was about, but it was a really good issue. I really liked it. I'm glad I have it now. So I have, that's another title I'm working on. I change my mood a lot, and Ghost Rider and Cap are two titles I've been working on lately.
Does Barb need you to do the Heimlich or anything back there? Or?
Barb, do you need the Heimlich? You
No, I'm
okay?
fine. I'm fine, thank
Just making sure she wasn't choking back there.
No, I get so used to it, I don't even know.
Yeah, that's probably like my wife with my throat, with me clearing my throat
Yeah.
all the time. She's used to hearing it. But all right. Well, for my next selection, let's turn to Adventure Comics number 306 from 1963. And it is a tale of the Legion of Superheroes, specifically from that issue, because I'm reading it from the archive. And is the introduction of the Legion of Substitute Heroes. So,
What is the issue number?
it was Adventure Comics 306.
Okay.
So, Legion of Superheroes at this point have been around for a few years in comics. And every once in a while, they select new members. And so, in Metropolis, and at this point, it was set, they were said to be in the 21st century. A ship arrives from planet Thar. A young man named Breck gets out on Earth, and he strolls down the avenue of superheroes, past the statues of Sun Boy and Cosmic Boy and Saturn Girl, and he thinks about how he hopefully will be one of their teammates soon, if it's everything that he's worked for and trained for. And so he introduces himself to the Legion. They're having tryouts. And says, "You can call me Polar Boy." And he can, so, and he demonstrates his power and explains where it comes from. But all the Legionnaires that are examining him, Sun Boy, Saturn Girl, Chameleon Boy, Bouncing Boy, they are all freezing cold because of his power. And they actually reject him because they are afraid that if he uses his power during battle, that the team will be disabled by his power as well. And so they give him the consolation prize, which is an anti-gravity flying belt. Is back at this point, they don't have the Legion flight rings yet. They use belts. And so he's dejected, very upset that he has not been accepted. And I would say, out of the Legion of Substitute Heroes that are rejected, his power is the most closest to one that should fit in. You know, they've got the opposite of his power, and so it's kind of, I feel bad for him. It's a little bit of a bum rap here, but he soon meets another reject from the team, Night Girl. She's
one of my favorites.
Yeah, she's a tall lady with black bouffant hair. She's dressed all in black. She's got a little owl insignia on her chest. And she gives him some consolation because she's been rejected as well. She shows him she is super strong. She actually picks up Cosmic Boy's statue in one hand. But the problem with her is that her powers are only good at night. And she didn't realize it because there's no sunlight on her planet. So it wasn't until she got to Earth that she realized her powers would go away. So the two of them, they meet up with some other rejects. We have Stone Boy, who can basically turn himself into stone and stay in one spot. We have Fire Lad, who can breathe fire. And then probably the funniest of them all is, at least in terms of his costume, he's got a tree on his chest, is Chlorophyll Kid, who can make plants grow. His origin is that he fell into a vat of plant growing solution in a hydroponic garden. So none of them were thought to be good enough, but Polar Boy says, "Well, why don't we, you know, form our own group? We won't compete with the Legion of Superheroes. We'll just be substitute heroes in case they need help or they need backup or anything like that." So they make their own clubhouse, and the five of them, they practice and train, and they have their own monitor of accidents and stuff. And so they make a couple attempts. You know, they find out some things are happening, some heroes are needed. But every time they show up, even if the regular Legion doesn't see them, the Legion doesn't need their help. You know, they've got it under control, and they're getting kind of depressed. It's like, you know, they're getting discouraged. It doesn't really seem like they need our help. Nobody really needs our help. The Legion's got it covered. We might as well disband and close up our clubhouse. But just as they're doing this, they have one last opportunity. They discover these plant creatures, and the Legion thinks that the threat is one place. There's these ships that are on their way to Earth, and the Legion thinks that that's the main threat, but it's actually a diversion. And these seeds are being sent to the Earth, and the seeds are actually seeds that grow into plant men that are going to attack. And so this is their opportunity. They get a chance finally, and they all have an opportunity to use their powers. Even Stone Boy, who is the most dejected, the most thinking that his power is useful, but he's able to act as a great decoy because he's able to withstand the attack of a whole bunch of plant men in his stone form, and he stands there letting them like wallop on him basically as a distraction while the rest of the team they go and they use their powers, and there's this kind of big huge pod sort of thing, and Fire Lad and Polar Boy are able to use both their powers to break into the pod. They basically expand a spot that Night Girl punches through and spread it wider. And then Chlorophyll Kid is able to use his power, because they're plant men, to greatly expand, make them all grow faster than they mean to. A great explosion of population that's going to burst that pod thing apart. So in the end, the substitute heroes are the ones that are the real heroes, but they are unsung heroes, as far as the as far as Earth knows. It's the Legion that protected the planet from the ships that were on their way, and there's a parade for them and all. And the substitute heroes are just a part of the crowd cheering on the Legion, but they're good sports. They're not they are not feeling bad about it or jealous. They're happy to cheer on the Legion because they love the Legion, and they're happy to be in the shadows. So it was a fun story to see the introduction of the substitute heroes. It was like a lot of stories at this time was written by Edmond Hamilton, and with art by John Forte. And yeah, I've been kind of reading on and off. I've been reading Legion's the early Legion stories. So this is just a little bit into, like, a few years into the Legion being around.
Did you read the Superboy that was with it?
No, because I read it in the
Showcase?
actually, yeah, and it doesn't have it just has the Legion story.
Okay.
Doesn't include that.
That's one I don't have. I wouldn't mind not having that though because of Night Girl. I wonder if that's her first appearance. I have to do some research.
I would think it is. I mean, unless they introduced her outside of a Legion story, because I've read every Legion story up to this story, so
First
I don't know where
appearance
else they
of
would have
Night
had her show up.
Girl, Legion.
So it'd be kind of funny if she could
It's
show up
probably
in
the,
this story.
yeah, it's 306.
Yeah, I think it's the first appearance for all five of them.
She became of my one of my favorites, like when they were doing I don't know if Legion was a backup story or what. I think it was an Adventure Comics, like right before the New 52. I really dug Night Girl and her costume that she had. I think she'd be a great character to get a commission from Andrew Peepoy from.
That'd
Yeah.
be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't read that. My Legion reading's kind of all over. Like, I've started reading some of this early stuff. I've read a little bit of the stuff prior to Levitz, and then I read when it was Legion Lost in Legion, and then like the Mark Waid Legion of Superheroes that followed it. I read all that when it was coming out, just that was like the first Legion stuff I read, just because I was trying all kinds of DC stuff at the time, and I found I really liked the Abnett and Lanning Legion.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know at the time, you know, that that was like a different take on some of the characters, and they had different names and stuff. And until I went back and was like, and saw, you know, the
original. If you started with that run, they named people differently. That's weird.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So
yeah,
you might like say, well, who's that? I mean,
yeah,
like,
initially
not,
I did
not know what that correlation is.
Yeah. I had to kind of, eventually, once I learned more about the Legion, I kind of had to go and sort of look up the characters and see how they had adapted them.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting.
They've had a weird history, like Hawkman.
Yeah, a lot of reboots.
Now they have, like, the Legion of Three Worlds, like, different versions of Legion, too. That's how they explain it.
Right,
in
yeah.
In Geoff Johns' worlds, yeah.
The master of retcons.
Yeah. Retcons, but like historical, he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, that's why.
So he's able to pull it off. Like
call him the master, because they're definitely retcons, but he does a really good job.
Yeah, he does a really good job
of weaving all the history together, just like with Hawkman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Another character, another series that I just picked up Hawkman because I saw it was getting good reviews. And I had, I think, at that point, read a little bit of Geoff Johns' stuff. And I thought, well, I'll check it out, and really enjoyed it because of how it was written. But didn't really know the history of the character. And it was only later that I, like, did the research to read about what he actually accomplished with that and how he wove a lot of that history in there.
Yeah.
And how that's how I realized what was going into all that.
Mm-hmm. So my last book that I read is Daredevil 91. This is the first appearance of the third Mr. Fear. But this is a great creative team, so I knew I was going to enjoy it. It's Jerry Conway writing with Gene Colan as the artist. And at this point, like, at least for me, Gene Colan was like at his peak. Like, this is the Colan art that I like to remember. He draws Black Widow like probably like the best I've ever seen it. Like it she's mm-hmm. just amazing. And scene opens up where Daredevil's like falling to his death and it looks like he's gonna die, and Black Widow works really hard to save him, and she saves him, and she gets really angry when she saves him because he never says thank you. Never, not one thank you. And she says, what's the matter with you? You never thank me for anything or accept me for who I am, which I thought was really interesting, because shortly after this book, it becomes Daredevil and Black Widow. And at this point, it's just they seem to have a falling out because Daredevil's not treating her good, but he doesn't understand why he's not treating her well either, so he, you know, he suspects something. And then Natasha goes off going after this Danny Frederick guy who's been, she knows he's a bad seed, and she follows him, and he's actually looks like he's not going to be a bad guy, but he is a bad guy. He's blackmailing this guy thinking he's saving him, but he's the one that blackmailed him to hurt him. And she has a fight scene with him, really well drawn fight scene. Like he really nails Black Widow. Like I really love this artwork, more so than Daredevil. But he finds this. He knows what's going on. He thinks this Mr. Fear is there, but he's like, he knows Mr. Fear is dead. He was a dead man, so he's like, am I going after a dead man? He kind of puts two and two together. And finds out that it was somebody that he had gone to law school with. He has a showdown with Mr. Fear, but he finds out who he is, and they have a fight scene with him, but he does get away. Oh, no, he doesn't get away. What the hell am I talking about? They have a fight scene on the roof, and he makes a jump to, like, off the roof, but he didn't realize that his jetpack was still on the roof. That was hilarious. He basically thinks he's escaping. He says, "I'll be back, my friend, and when I return, I will destroy you." And Daredevil's like, "Larry, wait, you're Jets, man. You don't have them." And you hear, ah, splat. He fell off the roof and died.
Oops.
Yeah. And I mean, at the way that it ends is Matt's trying to get a hold of Natasha, and he's not having any luck. So I imagine that he's going to go try to find her now that he knows what's going on with Mr. Fear. But it was a really fun issue. I liked it. And I especially liked the ending because that guy looked like he was going to get away, and he didn't. He fell to his death.
Due to his own forgetfulness.
Yeah. His jetpack was on the floor. I guess he didn't realize it was on the floor, and he took a big splat.
Oops.
Yeah.
All right. Well, my last selection is from the other side of New York City. At least at the time. The Avengers, number 7.
Ooh.
Still occasionally picking away at old Marvel, 60s Marvel issues. Mm-hmm. And, the issue before this one had the Masters of Evil, led by Baron Zemo. And he actually shows up again this issue. But it pulls in... It's interesting reading this issue, having been reading not every Marvel issue, but a lot of it leading up to this, because it pulls in a lot of villains from the solo series. You can see not a lot, but it pulls in a couple, I should say. You can see them on the cover. Besides Zemo, you have the Executioner and the Enchantress.
Masters of Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they weren't a part of the previous issue. The original Masters of Evil that Zemo put together. You had Radioactive Man, the Black Knight, and a couple others. But in this issue, which of course is by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, also Chick Stone, Art Simic, contributing. But it actually opens up really interestingly, where they're actually yelling at Iron Man. And it tells you to see Iron Man 56. And they're actually, Iron Man gets in trouble because he actually ignored, in that issue, he actually ignored a summons from the Avengers for personal reasons. If I remember correctly, in that issue, is kind of having a crisis of faith and being a superhero and feeling bad for himself and frustrated by the way in which he is dependent upon technology for his life and everything. So he feels bad about it, but and so he accepts being suspended from Avengers activities for a week. Thor lays down the sentence, and so that's his punishment for now. Meanwhile, speaking of punishments, in Asgard, Odin banishes the Executioner and the Enchantress for their attacks on Thor, which we also have an editor's note happened in Journey into Mystery 103. So Executioner gets stripped of the battle armor, and meanwhile you have Loki is up to his usual tricks. Woo! Thank you, Mabel.
Was that a sneeze?
Yes. Doggies don't know how to cover their nose when they sneeze. I got a little bit of a shower. Thank you for that, Mabel. All right, so anyways, back to the comic. Loki Yeah, it was his manipulations in that issue of Journey into Mystery that he was the one that got Enchantress and Executioner to attack Thor, but he's just kind of lurking in the background, like, ha ha, they're getting banished and I'm not. But it's pretty funny when the two of them end up on Earth. They just get plopped down in the middle of an intersection. And a policeman comes up. Look, Mac, how you and your lady friend dress in public is your business, so long as you don't break the law. But when you start interfering with the traffic around here, and obviously the executioner is not happy that, how dare you speak thus to me? But
What
Enchantress
kind
has
of
to.
sex games are you guys playing?
Yeah, really. But Enchantress has a little bit of a better idea what's going on with Earth and stuff. So she's like, come on, you gotta shut up. It's necessary to obey him. He's the guardian of the law. And I guess Executioner, he's never been there. He's confused as to all these men walking around without battle armor. And he's frustrated with the crowds on the streets in New York City. He's like, oh, he's just trying to walk down the street, but it's like bugging him out that all these people are getting so close to him. So he uses his power to shoot all these people like flying. But they come across a newspaper that talks about Baron Zemo leaving the country, and so that's where they get the idea to maybe pursue him. And meanwhile, back at Avengers Mansion, Captain America, who's only been around for 3 issues in the present, he's doing some training at a gym. And it's really weird. Rick Jones, he shows up dressed up as Bucky. He's like, he found Bucky's costume and he dresses up in it. And like, Cap's like, what the f? It's like, take that off. I never told you to wear it. He gets chewed out. I said, take it off. Don't ever call yourself my partner again. I lost my partner. I'll never forgive myself for letting it happen, and I'll never let it happen again. Do you think I could bear it if anything happened to you? I'll never have another partner. I won't be responsible for another life. Never. So he really chews out Rick Jones for, and that's kind of a weird move on Rick Jones's part to dress up in the costume without asking him.
He probably wants to be a sidekick. He
Oh
probably did it for a
yeah.
reason.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, Rick Jones wants to be everybody's sidekick. But it does offer a tie-in. And for the new reader to explain Bucky's death and how Cap blames him blames Zemo for that, which is kind of helpful to know. And that leads us into the Enchantress and Executioner appealing as images to Baron Zemo in his exile and appealing to him to team up. And so, back a little bit later on, back with the Avengers, Cap is outside somewhere with Rick, and this man shows up in a trench coat and hat, and he introduces himself as Hans Grubervelt. That he was used to be second in command of Zemo, and Cap immediately wants to attack him because he's associated with him. But this Hans Grubervelt, he says, "Well, that's why I'm looking for you. I no longer work with Zemo, and I want to tell you that he's got a small little thing going on in part of the Amazon jungle, and I could tell you where it's at."
Did you say
Well.
Hans Gruber?
Hans Grubervelt.
Oh, I was like, isn't that the Die Hard?
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Isn't it Hans Gruber? Yeah.
Sounds very familiar, yeah, now that you point that out. But it turns out to be a trap, actually, that this is the executioner disguised as this German man. And meanwhile, the Enchantress draws in with her powers of seduction. She draws Thor in as he's flying overhead, and uses her powers to seduce him and gets him drinking, and he passes out, and takes his helmet, and she starts working her magic on him. It turns out the drink she spiked with a potion that gives him nightmares of like this horrific Avengers team, demonic looking Avengers team. And it's over and over. She just works her magic until he wakes up under her spell and wanting to attack the team. Well, Captain America has located the Zemo's base and he's attacking that. And meanwhile, kind of a nicely staged scene where Giant Man and the Wasp are actually flying in on a helicopter to come back to Avengers base, and they're like, "Oh, look, there's Thor. There's Thor coming towards us." He's like, "Wait a second, what's up with that look on his face?" And then it's like, "Oh shit, Jan, shrink to Wasp eyes on the double, condition red. Thor is attacking us." And so Jan shrinks, and then Giant Man, he grows in time to survive because Thor just tears into their helicopter and explodes their helicopter with Mjolnir. Giant Man survives by making himself 40 feet high, but he's overextended himself and is kind of weak. So Iron Man's at home, because he's on detention. But he sees on the news about this attack, and he's like, "Well, banishment or not, they need my help." So he shows up and attacks Thor, and starts to put a little bit of a damper on the villain's plan here. Meanwhile, Captain America is on his own, going against Baron Zemo, and as he gets close to Baron Zemo, Baron Zemo tries to make his escape. At this time, Cap's shield, the way that he uses his shield is by transistor magnets that that Tony Stark put in there for him. And so, because there's the whole magnet situation, he's able to use the magnets in his shield to like his gauntlet and his shield to latch onto the side of Zemo's ship as he's taken off. While Iron Man and the other Avengers are still trying to fight off Thor without hurting him, Iron Man finally breaks Thor out of his hypnotism by pulsing a really, well, he like actually kind of catches the sun's reflection and directs it into Thor's eyes to blind him, and kind of clears out, somehow that works to clear the hypnotism of the Enchantress. And so the two storylines come together as Zemo arrives and his ship starts firing on the Avengers, and still not knowing that Cap is hitching a ride. So Cap goes crashing through with his shield into the cockpit and starts struggling for control over the ship so that he doesn't continue to fire on the Avengers. And but they end up being able to escape because Cap lands the ship, but as he's getting out, the executioner attacks him from behind. He chops him in the neck to knock him out and tosses him on the rooftop. And he and Enchantress climb in the ship and, with Baron Zemo knocked out inside of it, and take off. But at the last second, Thor throws Mjolnir and actually causes a space warp with Mjolnir, encompasses Zemo's ship and sends them. Giant Man says, "Thor, what did you do? Where is Zemo's ship going to end up?" And Thor has no idea. He says, "None can say. A space warp can lead anywhere to a different city or a different universe." So he just sends him wherever the hell, it doesn't even care.
That's interesting because he did that in an issue that I just read too,
Oh, really?
where he like teleported the Masters of Evil away from the city. So because they did that thing, the Masters of Evil, like, well, you're here to protect all the civilians. We'll just hurt the civilians. And, like Thor is like, well, I'll just zap you away. Except he zapped himself with them so they could fight. That was the only difference.
Oh, okay, nice.
But how does he get back if he doesn't know where he's zapping? That's why I don't...
Yeah. Well, maybe he just trusts that with that he can get back somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, in this case, he just sends the villains away to whoever, wherever the hell. And they took it right up to the line here. They only got a couple panels at the end of the issue just to kind of state that they're going to kind of get their ship back together and they'll be ready next time they show up. But next issue, it looks like they're going to have to deal with Kang the Conqueror. So they'll have their hands full.
Nice.
And after that, introduces Wonder Man.
That's I have appearance. That issue. Yeah.
Nice. Number 9.
Yeah.
Number 9.
That's my earliest nine. Avengers is number 5.
Mm.
But it has hole punches in it.
Oh, okay.
And then I have number 9. Nice copy, but faded. Mm-hmm. On the cover. It looks kind of like it has sun damage. But it's a really nice binding and everything. But, yeah, I've been reading some early Avengers, so that was fun to hear.
Yeah, it was.
Especially the Cap stuff, because I'm on a Cap kick. I'm like, really into Cap right now.
Yeah, it's kind of cool to see Cap in that sort of raw place of he's still adjusting to being in, you know, being woken up. It was only issue 4 that they found him, you know, so he hasn't been thawed out for very long.
Mm-hmm.
And still kind of adjusting to that. And he's very, like, very angry at Zemo, very, very impulsive. You know, not very, you know, you don't see, like, the strategic leader in him yet, you know.
Yeah. So I have one other pick, but it's not comics. I watched, Barb and I on Friday night watched some old Three's Company episodes.
Oh.
And there's two that I want to talk about. One of them, this is the Furley era, the Don Knotts era with Terry, where she's the roommate. And this one was really cool. One of them had to do with Jack going to the bank. And he went to withdraw $100 or whatever, and the bank just started spewing out money. And he hid the money under the couch, and Terry got rid of the couch to Mr. Furley, and it was just a bunch of misunderstandings because Jack left a message with the bank saying, you know, your machine shot out $1,000, and I only pulled $100, so I have some of your money. I'll return it on Monday. But for some reason, I guess he felt he had to hide the cash. I guess he didn't want to tell Terry or Janet, and he hid it under the sofa, and then it got into the Mr. Furley taking the money and then Larry saving the money from underneath the couch, and it was just a lot of misunderstandings like it usually is. But it was a fun episode. The next episode was really good because it was Three's Company is like a whole bunch of misunderstandings, but they're – it's formulaic, but it's very original in how they do it. It's this one. There's a magazine on the couch, and Larry just happens to open the magazine while Jack is, you know, cleaning house, and he says, "You know, somebody filled out a survey on this women's magazine, and it had questions like, do you have a male roommate?" And they said yes, and do you want to have an affair with your male roommate? And it said yes. And I had all kinds of weird stuff. And he's reading it to him, and Jack's like freaking out. I wonder if it's Terry or I wonder if it's Janet. Who wants to have an affair? And he goes, well, I got a plan. We could go out to my cabin. He has a cabin, and we could take both of them, and then I'll go along and keep one away from you while you try to find out who it is, and then we'll switch. I think Larry just wants to get a piece of ass, and he doesn't know. And it's weird because up to this point, Janet and Terry are leading him on like it could be either one. Like they say a lot of things that Jack is taking wrong.
Mm-hmm.
like, I can't wait to spend time with you. And then the other girl will leave, and then she says the same thing. And so they go up to the cabin, and Jack starts his plan where he wants to – he thinks it's Janet, so he goes out there in the bed with Janet, and he doesn't know that Larry switched places with Janet. So he, like, grabs her arm, and he's telling her all this stuff, and he's like – and it was Larry the whole time, but it was a bunch of misunderstandings, and eventually that he realized that neither one of them wanted to have sex with him. But it was a funny episode. Yeah, I missed that series, especially. I don't know. I really liked Don Knotts, and I actually am a fan. You know some people. Or like, well, I love the originals with the Ropers. You know, usually a TV show gets worse as they start replacing cast members.
Mm-hmm.
And Three's Company, for some reason, I think it got better. They've always had Larry, and they've always had Jack and Janet. But Chrissy was there, and then somebody after Chrissy, and then Terry was the third one. And I seem to like this Three's Company the best. And I think it's because... when Don Knotts replaced the Ropers, I just love Don Knotts. So, like, I'm a huge Don Knotts fan. Mostly from his, like, Disney movies and his outrageous movies. And I just really dug him as a kid. And I dug him when he was in charge of their apartments.
Yeah, I knew him when I was a kid because my dad used to watch Andy Griffith's show.
Andy Griffith's show, yeah.
Because my dad watched Andy Griffith's show when he was young, and then when it would come on TV, he'd watch it, and I'd see it, and I knew Don Knotts from that, and yeah, from some Disney stuff, like you said.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's cool. I remember occasionally, a lot, like when Three's Company was actually on TV, was actually airing, I was too young.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember seeing repeats on, like, Nick
TV
at Night.
Land
stuff
or
like
something,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was on the Logo, which is the gay and lesbian cable station, and I was like, why do they have it? And I was like, oh, I'm so stupid. Jack used to pretend he was gay in order so he could live with the two girls. So he did that with the Ropers, and he did that with Mr. Furley. So the Ropers, the Ropers and Mr. Furley always thought he was a gay man. So that was another thing that was a constant thing with them.
Yeah.
And Larry is like that. I don't know. He's so mischievous. He's like that friend, like your best friend, but he could get you into trouble. And and I really like him as a character. And it's just it's so cool to watch like what the fashions were back then too. Just to see the costuming and the stuff that they wore.
Yeah. You know who I happened to notice was in an episode of Three's Company was Cassiopeia.
Oh, was she?
Yeah, I just happened to, when I was looking up different people that were in Battlestar Galactica, I looked at her pictures and, yeah, if you're on her Internet Movie Database site, like the first picture or two is from Battlestar Galactica, and then... right after that is a picture of her with John Ritter and Joyce DeWitt.
Ah.
And I was like, oh, she was on Three's Company, but it was only one episode, like in season 5, apparently.
Yeah, we were watching a lot of retro stuff on Friday, and I had a great time. I before Barb came home, I got out of work early because we're on that Flex 980, and it was my day off, even though I worked. But I came home, and I did some stuff, and then I watched Battlestar Galactica. And then Barb came home, and we went Nate, and we started watching like an 80s show too, and that was like absolutely fascinating. Like, I just kept switching it between Three's Company during commercials and the 80s show. And the one thing that was really cool about the 80s, because I don't know, the 80s is when, you know, I was a teenager and stuff, so. I remember it very fondly, but they talked about two segments that I really enjoyed. One was the coming of Madonna, how she became really popular. And they showed the MTV, the first MTV Awards, where she performed like a virgin. And it's so weird seeing it now because she caused such a fad with that. Like, in the way she dressed, she started like a total fad. And she did like a virgin, and everybody in the audience was shocked at like her, what she was doing on stage. And I forgot about seeing that, and it just brought back a lot of memories. And then,
It's funny what was controversial then
yeah.
looks tame now.
And then the other thing that was like absolutely fascinating to me when I was watching stuff was they started to talk about the advent of the cell phone. And it's so weird because they had like AT&T and they're like, this is only going to be 1 million subscribers. We don't want to do with it. You could let this other small company take advantage of it. It was like Americom or something like that. And it's like they became billionaires because the cell phone industry just kept growing and growing and growing. So it was cool to see that it was such a bad call by such a major player. Do you know what I mean? Like just making a prospect, just throwing it away and losing some of the market.
Yeah, I mean AT&T, they had to really scramble to recover. I mean, wasn't it Singular that they bought out?
Yeah, I think so.
I think was the company that they bought, or they took over, and then eventually, instead of it being called Singular, it was called AT&T. But they had to scramble their way back into the cell phone market to catch up with Verizon and stuff,
Yeah.
because
So it was like a
they
Retro
messed up.
Friday.
Nice, yeah. I mean, I'm still, this, and I've talked about it off podcast, but I'm still working my way through Star Trek and all done with the original series and. Been watching the Next Generation now. I'm on the third season of Next Generation.
Did you ever continue with the animated one or no?
No, I feel like I'll go back and finish that up sometime, because it did, like I said, the animation wasn't great, but the stories actually, some of the stories are actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So I was just real anxious. I knew, like, once I finished the animated that I was gonna get to watch some of the movies, and I was just really anxious to do that. So I was like, screw it, I'm gonna start watching the
Did you
movies.
finish the movies?
No, I haven't, but I did watch. That's right, I did watch five.
Yeah.
I did watch Final Frontier, and it wasn't terrible. I mean, I enjoyed it.
The thing
It's
I
probably
like
my
about that
least
movie,
favorite.
it's one of my favorites just because of the camaraderie with the people. Like
Yeah, that's the best part of it. And
that's what that whole movie's about for me. And I find it so campy and ridiculous that I like to watch it, just like I like to watch Superman 3.
yeah.
I just find it fun.
I mean, I just don't th like it didn't I don't think Shatner really had the director chops, and it was just like, I feel like it was a bit of Me Too-ism, but I think Nimoy did a better job as a director. But it was enjoyable to me. I just, like, if I had to rank the first five that I've watched,
It would be last,
I
yeah.
would put it last. But it's kind of close. It is, even though it would be last, it would be kind of close to the Motion Picture and to Search for Spock.
I have to revisit the motion picture 'cause that's last for me, but I think I saw it at such a time that I thought it was crap.
Yeah, I
Now
would only
I'm
rank it a little
older.
bit. It would only be a little bit above Final Frontier. But it's just like, even the ones, like you said, I mean, even the ones that, because I like the cast so much, even the lesser ones, like I still found it enjoyable. I love, like, it was definitely a good, I mean, with Shatner directing, it was definitely a good Kirk movie. Like,
Row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. And then they all sing together. I love it.
Yeah, like in asynchronous, but
Yeah.
I did like I did think it was actually a good scene, and very Kirk-like. I thought it was like the perfect, very in character for Kirk,
Yeah.
faced with because if you watch the original series, like, they've come across so many beings that present themselves as God. You know, they've seen so many all-powerful deities and stuff that, like, have a lot of power but aren't trustworthy in the original series, that it makes sense for him to be skeptical.
Yeah.
And so when they're faced with God, like, it's just such a perfect Kirk moment for him to be like, excuse me.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The fact that he says, excuse me. What does God need
with
a starship?
Oh, I and fucking love
it's a,
that.
It's a great question. Like, if you're God, why the hell do you need a starship?
I didn't need a starship.
That's a perfect thing for Kirk to do, and I thought it was definitely in character for him.
I love that line. That movie a lot of people hate. And I don't know why I love it so much.
Yeah, no, I definitely didn't hate it. It was definitely, I have to give it a 3 because for me, like, if it's a 2, that means I didn't enjoy myself. It like wasn't, it might have had some redeeming qualities to not be a 1. But if I enjoyed myself and I found a number of things to enjoy about it, I gotta give it a 3. And
wait till you see 6.
Yeah,
I'm really curious what you think about 6, because 6 is my absolute favorite. It actually beat Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, and a lot of people do also seem to like that one too.
Plus,
so.
Plus, to me, you know, I'm a sucker for soundtracks, like, you know, like Battlestar Galactica, Star Wars, Superman. I love that Star Trek 6 soundtrack. It's cool. The only Star Trek soundtrack I own. That's good stuff.
But yeah, I'm enjoying The Next Generation. The first season kind of lived up to reputation of being uneven. And people include 2 with that too, but there are definitely some really good episodes in season 2. But I can definitely see the improvement with season 3 so far. And you know what? I came across a documentary on Netflix, Chaos on the Bridge, I think came out last year, and it's actually hosted by Shatner, but it's all about the Next Generation, like the first couple seasons, and when Roddenberry was still alive and all the chaos and difficulties the show had. It was really interesting. It's kind of fascinating. The only reason that show stayed on the air was because Star Trek fans are so faithful that they kept giving it a chance. But otherwise, I mean, that show probably would have been canceled and you wouldn't have had
any. Also, it was having a hard time finding its footing.
Oh my God, yeah. It was just, you should check out
the documentary. And I think that's why I jumped off. I didn't get very far. Do you know what I mean?
You should check it out, because Roddenberry, you know, he had this lawyer, and the lawyer, like, people hated the lawyer so much. Like, they talked to some of the writers and stuff that were on the show early on. And they just hated that guy so much, you know, but that led to why, Dr. Crusher wasn't on season 2, and why Tasha Yar, left the show. And,
wasn't she a favorite of people? Tasha Yar?
I don't know.
She seemed
Maybe
to have
some people. Yeah. But, yeah, it was very interesting documentary. If Barb hasn't seen it, she might know some of the stuff.
On Netflix?
Chaos on the Bridge.
Chaos on the Bridge. I'll tell her.
I mean, I knew a little bit about it, like, because, you know, Daryl had been telling me about some of it, how there was a lot of chaos behind the scenes. But it was cool. It was to see the interviews and see the people. They have some of the actors, like Patrick Stewart, Jonathan Frakes, some of the actors are interviewed. It was good. It was a good time to watch it. Although, I mean, they do kind of spoil the end of season 3 of Next Generation. But I also kind of sort of already knew it anyways. So But for the most part, it's the first.
So it was meant to watch about. After you've seen it, after you've seen the show.
I would think so, yeah. At least the first 2 seasons. And like I said, they don't really talk about season 3 except for how, like, they kind of finally got things going in the right direction at that point.
Oh, okay.
But they just happened, for whatever reason, happened to show you something from the last episode of season 3. And it really wasn't too much of a surprise. I'll I'll say it if you want to.
Yeah,
just
go
skip
ahead.
Ahead.
It's old stuff.
Yeah, skip ahead 30 seconds if for some reason you really don't want to know. But they just show that Patrick Stewart being Borg.
Yeah, I knew that.
Lakeena, and I did too. Like, I know that stuff happens with that, so it wasn't.
Well, it's in the movie, isn't it, too? Well, you haven't seen it yet. Never mind.
No, but I've seen clips from that. Like, I've seen pictures. So,
I haven't watched much, but like I said, when I was studying, Barb was watching Next Generation, so.
Yeah.
I'm, like, aware of it through the corner of my eye, but I never paid attention much.
Me too. Like, you can't escape it, you know.
Yeah.
If you're into like geeky stuff, you just don't. I don't care about being spoiled about anything. Like, I'm just looking to like experience it firsthand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So, as far as though what it talks about, it was good timing for me because I had already seen the first two seasons, and that's really what they're focused on,
mm-hmm.
talking about what was going on behind the scenes. So, yep.
All right. Well, that wraps. I'm just taking show notes here. That wraps up this episode, and you can reach us at geekbrunchpodcast.com, on Twitter at mythmakingetc, at Mike Myers Brunch. You're kicking up your From Kid to Flash again, so mm-hmm. so check that out. You could see usually post that on Geek Brunch, right? So you could see the links on it.
Yep.
On our Facebook page at Geek Brunch Podcast, you could click the like button and follow the episode threads there. mythmakingetc@gmail.com if you want to send Chris an email. If you want to send me an email, at mike@comicbooknoise.com. Try to leave an iTunes review if you get a chance. And I think that wraps it up. I'm looking forward personally to doing the next Battlestar.
Yeah,
because I really want because this one had like a conclusion. I mean, it did have an epilogue, but I want to remember where this went because I haven't seen it for such a long time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sounds good.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
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 Bye.